Will the public have a say on the future of the Jacksonville landing? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, we speak with City Councilman Matt Carlucci. He's calling for more public input into the fate of the landing. What do you think? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we speak with author C.H. Hooks as he makes a couple of appearances in Jacksonville to promote his new book, Alligator Zoo Park Magic, a true Florida story. Also, Jack's Poetry Fest wraps up this weekend with some celebrity appeal from NPR's own Al Letson. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a newly elected city official is calling for more public input into the fate of the Jacksonville Landing before it is torn down. Of course, the city is in the process of taking possession of the landing. City Hall wants to raise the structure and put something new on the site. Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci has gone public with his desire to create what's called a charrette, a workshop where the public can weigh in on potential outcomes for this prime downtown parcel. And he joins us now in studio with more. Councilman Carlucci, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. thank you for having me this morning. Excuse the voice, yeah. But I'll get through it.
Same here. I'm having a frog in my throat today, too. Okay. We'll work through it. And hopefully the callers can help us out, since sometimes talking can be a little bit of a struggle when you're not feeling great. So give us a call right now as we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci. What do you think should be done with the Jacksonville Landing? Are you for or against the idea of demolishing the site? And let us know what you think would be the best option for this parcel to continue in the vein of downtown revitalization. Already getting your calls. It's 549-2937. Call us up. Email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And weigh in on Facebook. So, Councilman, you made this pitch to the Downtown Investment Authority. You also met earlier this week with Mayor Lenny Curry, who's made it plain that he would like to demolish the landing and start over. Why go through the process of what's called a charrette, a public workshop on this?
Well, first of all, I've learned charrette means different things to different people. What I am saying is I would like to see a robust community conversation prior to the demolition. I'm not saying don't do. I'm saying we should listen. And, you know, for so many times, so many years, we have wanted people to pay attention to downtown, and now all of a sudden they are. And I think this is a good time to leverage people's engagement in downtown. That's a good thing. And so I'm just wanting to have a robust discussion. It has to be organized. It can't be just a town meeting where you open up to every idea in the world, because you got to focus in on a concept, I think. But I find that when people start talking about it, and particularly young people, younger than me, obviously, but man, the ideas just keep coming and coming, and they're wonderful ideas. And you know what? We want young people downtown, and young people are going to be moving downtown. So this is a key piece of property. It's a property that's still beloved, even though it may not be viable for everybody in Jacksonville, but it's still beloved. It's like the centerpiece on the Thanksgiving table. That's what I call it. And so it's important that we do the right thing. The landing for no other reason is iconic, just because of that orange roof and people are used to seeing it. Maybe that goes away. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But I think we need some community involvement. And I think they want, when you do that, then they buy in, no matter what happens.
You're a popular local presence. You won your at-large race with, nearly 70% of the vote. And so you're speaking to a countywide constituency when you talk about this. At the same time, you've got some wind in your sails. When we look at the recent picture of people demonstrating increasing frustration and upset with the pace of the demolition of downtown buildings with no viable plan to put something up in their place. Potentially we could just be looking at more downtown parking lots in the wake of these demolitions. At the same time, let me ask you this, Councilman Carlucci. Former Mayor Alvin Brown wanted to bring down the landing. The idea of a charrette was floated during his administration, and things dragged on, and now here we are again. So what would you say to those who are hearing all of these arguments, but they just think the time is right to turn the page on this and not have any more discussion and debate about this concept that has failed, essentially, this 30-plus-year-old mall that just isn't working anymore?
Well, I understand well how people can get fatigue over hearing about what to do and so on and so forth. But a charrette or a public brainstorming session, those don't take that long a time. They have to be done professionally. And the Downtown Investment Authority would be the authority that would put something like this together. But they don't take a long time. This would not hold things up. It just gives people a chance to buy in. When you start getting people buying in and you're listening to them, you know, not everybody's idea may get placed in the final product, but they feel like they were a part of it. And then when the final product is kind of unfolded, people are bought in, then they want to move. They want to see action done. I can tell you, I want to see action done.
What would you like to see done with the site?
Well,
if you could just unilaterally declare, this is what it's going to be.
I've been concentrating so much on trying to hear what other people want. I haven't really sat down and thought, well, what would I want? But I can tell you what I think it needs to include. It still needs to be a gathering place. It still needs to be the place where we can have concerts. It still needs to be a place where we'll have a Christmas tree. It still needs to be a place where the Florida Georgia fans can come and have fun. It needs to be a place that has, even if it just goes the park route, it needs to have activities that will draw people. It can't just be a passive park, in my view. It's got to be something that draws families down there and young people down there.
With Shad Khan's ambitious plans for Lot J and the area around the football stadium, are you concerned that all of those community gathering types of events will shift eastward to the sports complex? Could we see a future where that, you know, Florida Georgia fans, they congregate in the sports complex, not the landing. The Christmas tree goes up in the sports complex. The concerts are in the sports complex. I mean, that certainly seems to be what Mr. Khan is envisioning, and the mayor, who's working with Khan.
Well, I will tell you, there are a lot of events that go on at the landing, and there's enough to go around everywhere. But I still think when it comes to certain central themes, the landing property would be just kind of the ideal place to congregate. But I'm really open to anything. It's just a chance to engage people in downtown ideas. And how long have people been saying, wish we could get people to get interested in downtown? And now they are. So let's take advantage of this. Let's leverage that interest. So.
And judging by our jam phone lines, you're absolutely right.
Well, I hope
lots
so.
Of people waiting to engage on this topic with City Councilman-elect Matt Carlucci on the fate of the Jacksonville Landing as he calls for a public charrette on what to do about this downtown parcel. And let's go to your calls right now. Patrice is on the west side. Hi, Patrice. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like the landing to probably be an annex of one of the FCCJ campuses, because I think that would be a interesting mix between the business community and the businesses and the community, because any education is going to feed into the business sector. So I just think that would be interesting. I haven't explored it a lot. I just think that would be interesting. That's just my opinion.
Thanks, Patrice. Yeah. With an increased student presence downtown, should this space incorporate FSCJU is also increasing its downtown presence.
Well, first of all, she said it was just her opinion. Her opinion's valuable. And whether that were to become readapted into classroom space or not, I don't know. But she's right about one thing. It would be a good thing to have a presence of college-age students downtown, because that would bring excitement. It would bring an energy to downtown that we're sorely missing today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I walked downtown over the weekend just to kind of look at the landing, the condition of the landing, and so on and so forth. I could have rolled a bowling ball down any street, and it would never hit anybody.
Right, which is the problem, of course.
That's right.
Yeah, getting vibrancy
back. She's on to part of what our problem is. We need the young people down there.
Victor in Spring Glen. Hello, Victor.
Hey, how are you? Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So basically, I'll chime in with an opinion as well. I think raising the landing prior to having a plan in place is not the best approach. I'd love to see some type of maybe world-class, you know, art museum, but also incorporating that educational component. JU's in town, UNF's in town, FSCJ, maybe having some type of STEAM incubator, which is also going to benefit, you know, disenfranchised youth who are having a hard time finding things to do and where to kind of release their creative talent. So that's where I'm headed.
Okay, Victor. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lots of people wanting to weigh in with ideas and calls from all over the listening area.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
See, people are
they're
excited about the opportunity to have their say.
Lucy is in the town center area. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. I would like to suggest the green space, like over at Five Points Riverside area, and then have elevated restaurants above, and people could walk and stroll underneath the restaurants and provide shade during the hot summer days. But yet you could, if the restaurant wants to, people could have a beautiful view without people passing in front of them, and you could incorporate the shade. And that's my thing, and to have some reasonably priced restaurants for families. Because if you bring three little kids down there, you can't do $10 a plate for $50 and pay for parking. Come on. You have to have maybe a few trucks, maybe a place of pizza or, you know. All right. That's my comment.
Okay, Lucy. Thanks for that. And, you know, she's calling from the town center area, mm-hmm. which, of course, is a huge hub for dining, shopping, entertainment.
Yeah, downtown,
you'd like to get some of them downtown,
but
of course.
I hear let me just say this real quick. I hear a lot of people describing their ideas just like what she did right there.
Jason is in San Marco. Jason, what are your thoughts?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, yeah, I have some great ideas. So if you'll bear with me, you know, the Jackson Mag is a place where I go to blog, and I know that you guys have a partnership with them. You frequently have Ennis on. He's a very, very well-informed and creative guy in terms of urban planning. I'll throw this out there. We need a place where the city and the county, the entire Northeast Florida, can come together. So I would put out something like this. On your ground floor, a series of museums and interactive spaces. For example, Jacksonville's own Southern Rock Museum, La Villa Greats of Jazz Interactive Space, mm-hmm. a Jacksonville and Navy Town Theater Museum, maybe a tribute to the Great Fire and our architectural heritage. You could do some reproduction PT boats offering 30-minute cruises all over the St. John's, a CSX and the History of the Railroad in Florida Exhibitor Theater, revolving tall ships exhibits, a tribute to the Blue Angels Theater. You could do a lot. You could tie in with Mosh and have a complimentary water taxi with a paid admission. All of those things would be free for whatever, maybe a $10 admission. Mm-hmm. On the second floor, you could have a food hall featuring Jacksonville's own restaurateurs. There are so many fantastic ones, and a beer garden featuring all the fantastic microbreweries in this region. Do not knock it down. Make it a place that shows off the things that makes Jacksonville special. There's so many things, and it's such a broad range of offerings that you would have people stopping on 995 northbound, southbound. You'd be bringing people from the beaches to come downtown. It would be a great complement to the TU next door and be a terrific anchor on Laura Street.
Would you see it still? Because I love your ideas. First of all, let me say that. You've got them down pat, and you know what you like. Would you still like to see it become a rallying point where – so for so many years, we've come together at certain occasions. Is that something that you would include in your your thoughts, your ideas?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Sure. If you've got a Southern, Jacksonville's own Southern Rock Museum, you've got a platform there to have
you. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. You know, Jason, it's amazing. You know, I just took a friend the other day over to Riverside Avenue so that she could have her picture taken in front of the plaque of the site where the Allman Brothers Band first jammed and formed. And, you know, Jason, I have to tell you, it's amazing to me that we don't already have a museum and a focal point attraction for being the birthplace of Southern rock. It's incredible to me that we have that Jacksonville hasn't capitalized on that more.
And let me tell you, the Southern rock, and then let's look at it another way. This has been highlighted, and that is our African-American heritage.
Absolutely.
That is
this city has never capitalized on adequately. Jason, finish up if you could.
Well, I was just saying, I went real quickly through my list, but I've given a tremendous amount of thought to this. And yes, La Villa, Greats of Jazz, interactive space. So you can see all the amazing jazz musicians who spent time in Jacksonville, who put their heart, soul, and their blood into this city. It's kind of lost. We need a space. If you put the downstairs with several of these wonderful interactive spaces, you know, 20 or 30 minutes per space, kids are going to want to see it. Families are going to want to see it. I mean, I really think the answer to the landing is right before our very eyes. And it might be that we could do a very creative partial demolition so that you open up the building to so that you Laura Street connects to the water, but you don't destroy the entire structure.
Yeah.
There's a very clever artist rendering of this on the Jackson.
And I, thank you for that, Jason. I want to get to that. And I thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you for that, because the Jackson is our content partner here at WJCT, and they have been quite vocal about this for some time. Let me read an email that just came in from Bill at the Jackson, and he writes, "The city has a good idea of the things we want to see at the landing space, more green space, an opening at Laura Street, and a right-sized commercial component to draw activity. All that can be accomplished by selective demolition at the current space, and you can go to thejacksonmag.com to see a plan that they're featuring." And then he writes, "Many thanks to Matt Carlucci for bringing up reasonable concerns about the city's plans for the landing and pushing for the public to have a voice. The city needs a plan in place before undertaking an expensive demolition of yet another sound structure." That's the pushback, Councilman, that so many buildings that are structurally sound are just being razed in the urban core. The old Greyhound bus station, for example, was torn down. It's now a parking lot. Whereas 2 hours up the road in Savannah, Georgia, they took their old Greyhound bus station and turned it into an incredible restaurant that now is drawing tourists from all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
So the adaptive reuse argument is don't take down a structurally sound building if you can find a way to reuse it. All of that said, though, let me ask you, if there's no political will to do what you're suggesting from the mayor's office in particular, how can this be accomplished, what you'd like to see happen?
Well, I think that the after speaking with the mayor, I think the mayor wants a legitimate community discussion on this. And I think he'll be fair. I think he's I'm not sure how he will organize it with his administration. But I want to back up just for a minute to be fair to Mayor Curry. They are engaged in the transfer of the ownership. And I'm going to tell you, that's probably, you know, stuff that's going to take some time, and that's what they're focused on now. I believe that he will come up with some good ideas on how to have community discussion. And I want to make sure I say that, because otherwise I wouldn't be being fair to my mayor. He's my mayor, and I want him to succeed. And I'm his councilperson, and I want to help him, and I hope that he'll try to help me as well.
That is certainly a classy response, and you're taking the high road after Mayor Curry tweeted what many perceived to be a veiled swipe at you, Matt Carlucci. He tweeted, "Elected officials afraid to make a decision because they are gunning for a political future has been the bane of our city. No more retreading." When you met with him, did he apologize for insulting you on Twitter?
I didn't take offense to that, and I don't go on Twitter very much, and so I guess if you call somebody who's been on the council before, and it's come back 16 years later. I guess perhaps I am a retread. But I'm kind of like a newly young city councilman at this point. I'm having a good time.
He seems to perceive that you're gunning for a higher office than city council, and that's why you're floating a big idea.
No. I'm 63 years old. You know, it was hard enough getting elected at large.
That's a lot of door knocking.
Listen, I'm not looking at the next election. The first words I remember my daddy saying as a young man at the age of 10, when he got his 2 minutes on Channel 4 as a candidate, and he said, "Statesmen look to the next generation, politicians look to the next election." Listen, I just got elected. I hadn't even taken office yet. I felt duty bound to give so many ideas a platform. And I feel like if I don't use the council seat that I have for good, and in the right spirit of what's the right thing for the next generation, then why am I elected? I could be doing a lot of other things at age 63 through age 67. And if I were to run for a second term and were successful, I'd be 71. At 71, I'm going fishing. Maybe my boys will want to, take over after me. But so, his tweet, he loves to tweet, and that's the way a lot of people communicate. But the one thing I know, and I said this in my campaign, it was not to get votes. It was a principle that I hold to the core of my soul, and that is Jacksonville moves best when we move together. And that's where I thought if we could pull people together, especially on downtown, that we really want people to get excited about. If we don't do that, we're missing an opportunity. But, to be fair to the mayor, he wants to have that. But I think he's just trying to make sure he's got an order of steps that he wants to go through.
And lots of calls meanwhile. Such a hot topic, always is on this show. What do you think should happen to the Jacksonville Landing? Councilman Matt Carlucci is with us. He's proposing more public input before the building is raised. Demetrius is in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Demetrius.
Hi, Melissa and Matt. I've heard some wonderful ideas, but there's just one problem that still concerns me concerning the landing, and that is parking. Where are people going to park? I mean, that's been the bane of that location forever.
Yeah. Well, there's a parking garage right across the street, a big one.
Okay. Do people use it?
Some people do. But I think that you're right about the fact that there's still an inaccurate perception, but it's one that many people have, which is that there isn't enough parking. Thanks for that call, Demetrius. This comes up time and again, Councilman. There is enough parking to go to the landing or anywhere downtown you want to go if you are willing to park a block or two away or park in a garage.
Right.
Well,
if I go to the town center, which I do occasionally, usually where I wind up parking, I'm a good 4 or 5 blocks from where I'm going to wind up at my destination. But, hey, walking's not bad. Walking's good for you. I'm a physical education major. Okay, that's what my major's in. And walking is a good thing.
Frank on the South Side. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa and Matt. I just wanted to call in and just add to that chorus of some of the earlier callers and Matt, who just like the idea of bringing the city together. I think this is an opportunity for our leadership to really take the lead on bringing the city together by making it a cultural space, a historical space. You guys have already talked about the rich history that Jacksonville has and being really creative, like the earlier caller, about taking advantage of that space with the goal of bringing all of our cultures together, not just the Black history, which, of course, is very rich and profound, but, all other cultural history as well. This is the perfect opportunity to make that happen, I think.
Thank you, Frank. The Ritz Theater and Museum is already downtown in the La Villa area, and I recommend anyone who wants to learn more about this city's incredible Black history, go visit it. At the same time, we hear a lot of this feedback, Councilman, that the city just has not done enough to create a focal point capitalizing on what makes Jacksonville unique. Southern Rock, we were the Harlem of the South, a focal point for this area's food. You know, when you go to, let's say, Memphis, Tennessee, everybody knows about Graceland. When you go to Cleveland, everybody goes to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. And we don't have that same attraction. We haven't used our local history in the same way that other cities have.
Right. Well, a lot of mid-sized cities don't have perhaps as deep a national history in certain ways that, you know, Nashville does or Charleston does. But we have an interesting history in Jacksonville. And a lot of it surrounds the St. Johns River, which is right where the landing sits. And so one of the ideas that a young person was talking to me about was having a small 400-square-foot type mid-sized restaurants that serve different types of cuisine, and the one that would be closest to the river might be seafood, you know? And so there's a lot of ideas out there that people want to share, and I'm trying to help give and lend voice to that. But yet I want to be very respectful to the mayor and his processes and the Downtown Investment Authority. And we need to remember the Downtown Investment Authority was created to wake up every day and think about what's going to happen in downtown. And so, you know, perhaps they'll have more to say about this. The reason I went to the Downtown Investment Authority in April was because in May, my wife and I are going to go on a vacation, and we're going to have some fun, get away from the work, because come June and July, I'm going to be getting a little busier. Mm-hmm. And so the meeting, at the next DIA meeting was in May. But so I just love hearing people's ideas. And listen, everybody needs to understand that all their ideas can't be included, but I think you can build consensus. And when people feel like they're being heard, you know, they're going to be fair. And that's, I believe in that. But when people don't have, when they feel like their voices are not being heard, then that doesn't generate the civic pride that we want.
Lots of people making their voices heard on the show right now and on social media. A couple of tweets. Here's one from Jack. Burn it down. Councilman-elect Rory Diamond, who will be your colleague on the new council.
Yes, he will be.
Tweets the show an image of a bomb blowing something up. That tells you where he stands. And so certainly the city council isn't all on the same page. On this, here's a tweet from Goliath. I thought this was all decided. What would a new structure do that this one isn't doing? And then on Facebook, Karen writes, renovate the current structure, add parking, a real food hall, retail and restaurants, repair the North Bank Riverwalk, make it a destination again. Let's take a few more calls. Richard is on the north side. Richard, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, my point was, if we were to, everyone has heard pretty much by now about the death of the rapper Nipsey Hussle. But yeah. If you were to really look at Nipsey Hussle's life, you will see that Nipsey Hussle was a pure entrepreneur who was tapping into a very live spirit within our young African-American men who have been totally ignored by the wealthy elite in this country. This man took the block that he used to sell albums on and bought it with his money. We could take that landing and turn it into an entrepreneurial hub specifically for musicians. You could put a recording studio in there. We have the downtown, what the movie agency or whatever the case is, that has done, Todd Rubin has done absolutely nothing in the years that he's been here as far as making Jacksonville a movie mecca. You put a center there that anybody who wants to produce something creative, positive, or whatever would come to the landing. My other suggestion is this. Take the biggest room possible and put all the Confederate monuments that you can find in there and let everybody who wants to go see them do that. And then when you're ready to destroy the landing and those monuments, and let's start over new. That's my suggestion.
All right, Richard. And, you know, to be fair to the film commissioner, the state did take away incentives for movies here, but that's another story. Okay. You know, people have no shortage of ideas, Councilman. So your final thoughts about how this is going to go forward. Do you anticipate this charrette building enough popular backing that it can actually happen?
What I would suggest is that I've laid my idea on the table. I did it as a private citizen and a council member elect, and I did it because I felt that I should, on behalf of all of the people that have called me and so forth. Now, so to call me would be like preaching to the choir. I think we should be fair with the mayor to see what kind of community discussions that he wants to have. But if you want to get your ideas across, then I think calling the mayor's office or sending letters, emails, and also to other council members, be they council members elect or be they the current council. This is not an attempt to do anything except I'm trying to reflect the fact that there's lots of people that want to get engaged. And you know what? If I had a line of people at the front of my office wanting to buy all kinds of different insurance, I may not sell them every insurance that they want, but I'd sure love to
You're
have
You're not a, like Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day?
I'd love,
really?
To have a lot, love to have a lot, of, lot long line of people coming in, and then I'd listen
You're
to them.
You're not going
to
sell term life, whole life?
Well,
the other one?
But here's what a good salesperson does. A good salesperson says, Melissa, what is it you're trying to accomplish? What is it that you want to do that you think is going to help you? And then let me see what I've got that can help you accomplish your goals. Listen. You listen, listen, listen. And so that's what I've tried to do. And I am very much in respect of the administration and will be happy to see what discussions they have with. But I think it's important to contact the mayor's office, and I think it's important to contact other council members. And if I'm off base on this, then, hey, I no pride of ownership. I'm just trying to do something good for the city. And like I said, I'm not a youngster anymore, but by golly, I want whatever I can do to make Jacksonville better for little Matthew III, Joseph II, and my little darling Lily Kate. That's what I want to do. And for your kids and everybody else's grandchildren.
Well, Councilman-elect Matt Carlucci, thank you so much for appearing on the show. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Always great to see you. And thank you to all your listeners.
Lots of them out there who weighed in today. And much more still ahead later. NPR's own Al Letson, featured at the Jax Poetry Fest. But up next, we speak with author C.H. Hooks. We'll be right back.
I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
If you're almost certain, say 93%, that someone is about to do a very bad thing, what should you do? Can you have them locked up, detained, corralled for something they haven't done yet? On the next Snap Judgment, find out. Snap Judgment. Do not miss it.
Saturday afternoon at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting wjct.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
Welcome back. It is the story of two friends living on the edge of poverty in a very rugged part of Florida. Bridge 8 Press, a Jacksonville-based publisher, just released its first novel by author C.H. Hooks. Alligator Zoo Park Magic is a true Florida tale, and Hooks is signing copies of the book today at a special appearance at Chamblin's Uptown. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're from this area, now living up in Georgia, and you've written a novel that's, I think, a kind of a quintessential Florida story. Tell us what inspired your book, Alligator Zoo Park Magic.
I live up in Georgia now. I live on the coast of Georgia. I teach up at the College of Coastal Georgia, so that's what relocated us up that way. When I was working on this book, I was living in Northeast Florida, of course, and really traveling this landscape and seeing the scenery and seeing these small areas of Florida that are very much still living, really trying to keep my daughter asleep in the in the car seat while we were driving around, was how I took in so much of the landscape. And it certainly was inspirational.
This is a story about two men, Jimmy, a single father who has an addict ex, and Jeffers, a magician who performs tricks that are closer to miracles. And of course, wild beasts, alligators are running free, which we already know about in this state. You employ magical realism, in a sense, in this book.
You know, I touch a little bit on it. There's magic, but it's more sleight of hand, right, for the most part. I've hesitated to use the word magical realism just because it's more absurdist.
That sort of captures Florida, doesn't it? It's sort of absurd.
I mean, this is our experience every day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Magic certainly has an element in there. It is definitely present. Yeah, it's more, I would say we kind of lean more to that absurd strangeness that I think we all embrace around here.
Yeah, Florida man in real life. So you're going to read an excerpt from Alligator Zoo Park Magic.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I thought I'd go in and read probably chapters 1 through 12. I think I'm going to skip 13 and then we'll go all the way to 30 from there. Does that sound good?
Yeah, right. I wish we had time. But for real now, here is author C.H. Hooks reading from his first novel, Alligator Zoo Park Magic.
Yeah, I'm going to go on and start with chapter 1 because that's where it begins. So Jeffers was looking like a ghost hanging upside down from that big old oak tree, the one we used to swing from out into the spring's cool waters. That tree was there probably a few hundred years, not thinking it would ever be used for magic. But there was Jeffers, his nice guy eyes plugged deep, a slight of spirit and a head full of hurt. He took in a lifetime of everybody's bad and made good. He hung by his ankles, all slithered up in rope coils, a bunny wrapped up in a snake. "I don't get the trick," some city boy was saying, still looking down to make sure they'd followed the right directions out into our woods and far out of feeling comfortable. I don't know that anybody there was knowing what to make of Jeffers in the trees, rope creaking, hanging by his feet in the orangey-pink twilight. People were swatting at their bodies and listening to the crickets and the frogs get their songs started. That little sliver of a moon was peeking through the trees, winking at everybody, like it was in on the joke. This is the first two paragraphs or three paragraphs, and
yeah.
The whole book is like that, I promise.
Now, this is your first novel, and it's also the first novel published by a local boutique literary publisher, Bridge 8 Press. So a big outing for them, too.
Yeah, definitely. It's been the great experiment for us both.
Okay. And you are on what you're calling the Wild Alligator Book Tour.
Yes.
You visited 9 states already?
Let's see. I've been to, so far, we've done, I guess, 14 or 15 events since March 5th when the book came out. And yeah, it continues.
People have a fascination with Florida and the our alligators and our crazy people and just the mythology around this state that I think you've captured in this story.
Well, thank you. And I've tried to be gentle, too. I've tried to be kind to Florida. I have a real affinity for it. So I didn't want it to be like necessarily some Florida man story that's poking fun at somebody. I felt like it was really important to capture the humanity of this area, too.
Now that you live up in Georgia, do you have a little more distance from living here, being brought up here? Do you look at the state a little differently?
We look down at it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I really, you know, the coast of Georgia where I am, we're 30 minutes from the state line. It's kind of Florgia, if you will. It's this odd little amalgamation of Georgia and Florida and all the strangest parts. So I still feel like I experience quite a bit of it up there. Mm-hmm. But I'm down here quite a bit too.
Well, you can meet C.H. Hooks today at Chamblin's Uptown, as he will be signing copies of his book, Alligator Zoo Park Magic. That's today from 10 a.m. to 12:30. And he'll also be doing a reading at the Bookmark in Neptune Beach Friday, May 10th at 7 p.m. So a couple of opportunities to connect with C.H. Hooks as Bridge 8 Press, the Jacksonville-based publisher, releases his first novel, Alligator Zoo Park Magic. Such a pleasure. Thanks for being here. Have fun.
Melissa, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
More literary news next as Jack's Poetry Fest wraps up this weekend with some help from NPR's own Al Letson. We'll hear from him and some other people about poetry in a moment. We'll be right back.
WJCT and the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp are honoring teachers that attended the 2019 Teach Conference and all teachers dedicated to educating our youth. Join us and Clifford the Big Red Dog on Sunday, April 28th at 3:05 p.m. Info at wjct.org/events.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the Mueller Report with Washington Post investigative reporter Rosalind Helderman. She co-wrote the commentary and analysis in the Post's publication of the report. We'll talk about the new things she learned that went beyond what journalists like her had already reported. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world. Hi, it's Robin Young, co-host of Here and Now. Next week, join me and Jeremy Hobson on 89.9 FM WJCT at 1 p.m. We feature interviews with newsmakers, NPR reporters, innovators, artists from across the U.S. and around the world. Join us.
Shampoo, skin cream, sports drinks, everything, it seems, can be personalized.
You know, there are a lot of people out there who just expect more and more of their life to be catered to them.
I'm Kai Rizdo on what the boom in custom consumer products says about those consumers in this economy. Today, that is next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Next year, one cultural group is on track to become the second largest in the nation after whites.
When it comes to distrust of government, family values, being against abortion, you know, Latinos would line up Republican but for the toxic rhetoric on immigrants.
We head across America to meet Latino voters in Houston. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the Jax Poetry Fest has been going on for a full month, and it's wrapping up this weekend with a special attraction. With more, here's Stephanie Fletcher, who runs Hope at Hand, focusing on poetry as therapy, and Christina Parrish Stone, who heads up Friends of Hemming Park. That's where the festival is going on. Ladies, good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Now, this is a month-long poetry event, Christina, that is having its big finale this weekend with a full day celebration on Saturday. How's it been going?
It's fantastic. Hemming Park's only played a small role in Jax Poetry Fest. Stephanie actually has programmed dozens of other events and other locations, but we started, and thanks to you, we kicked things off at Art Walk with performances. And then every Thursday this month, we've done poetry readings in the park. But yes, we're excited about the big event with Al and four other nationally known spoken word artists on Saturday.
That's right. That's right. NPR's own Al Letson will appear in Hemming Park Saturday, along with other national names. We talked with Al about his love of poetry. Let's listen.
God, the world just needs more poetry. I think that right now we're in this place where we get so pressed on the way the world is and what it looks like, and we don't take the time to like reflect, and not just the beauty of it, but like how everything that affects us, like how it connects to our soul, right? And I think that that's what poetry is really about. It's about expression.
Stephanie Fletcher, Executive Director of Hope at Hand. That's a good summation of what you're trying to accomplish with the Poetry Fest. Tell us a little bit more about why this has really just been an incredible several weeks for people who love the written word and the spoken word.
This is our fourth annual poetry festival, and we are thrilled this year to have partners. We are working with Friends of Hemming Park and the Performers Academy, and it has really made all the difference in the world this year. So we've had, I believe, 18 days of free programming poetry workshops. We have one tonight at Mocha from 6 to 7:30. We have poetry readings today at lunchtime in Hemming Park. So if you're in the area and want to stop by, just grab some food and listen to poetry. And then our closing event is on Saturday. We also have workshops going on from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock at Mocha. And then we have poetry in the park from 5 to 9.
And tell us a little bit more about Hope at Hand, because you use poetry really to help people do more than just enjoy the reading of it and the speaking of it. It's therapeutic.
It is therapeutic. We are trained by the National Association of Poetry Therapy, and we work mainly with at-risk youth. We go in the jails, we go into drug rehab centers and shelters, and we work with kids through poetry therapy, and it's really, really beautiful work. We're actually the lucky ones.
It is beautiful. And so, Christina, this Saturday is the big day. It's an all-day event in Hemming Park, which is exciting. What all can people take part in?
So we are starting the day with performances by local dance students for National Dance Week at 12 o'clock. Throughout the day, we'll have food trucks, and the poetry activities begin at 5. Al's performance and the performance of other poets, including Ebony Payne English, who is our partner through the Performers Academy, Kia Flo, Love Rains, Matthew Cuban Hernandez, begins at 7, and will continue till later in the evening. We also have a DJ and music. So really something for everyone. It's a family-friendly event. We're excited that JTA has joined us as a sponsor and will be providing transportation on the Skyway, so parking will not be a problem. You can park at any of their lots and take the Skyway downtown. And, you know, I listened to Matt Carlucci earlier talking about downtown. This is something, one of those opportunities to really fill downtown with people and create that vibrant downtown experience that we all want to see. So I hope lots of people will jump on the Skyway and join us for some really great performances.
Yeah, including our own friend and colleague Al Letson, who, of course, is from Jacksonville and is now heard nationally on the Peabody Award-winning NPR program Reveal. And he is a spoken word artist, and so we're excited to see him coming back for the weekend, too.
It's great timing. Al's show just won 2 more Peabody Awards earlier this week. And, yes, he got his start right here in Jacksonville, winning Poetry Slam Contest, and has gone on to do great things and represent Jacksonville well nationally.
Stephanie Fletcher, people can learn more at jackspoetryfest.org. This is the 4th annual. I'm sure next year will be bigger and better than ever as well.
Green and growing.
Yes. So thank you both so much. Christina Parrish Stone, Friends of Hemming Park, Stephanie Fletcher, Hope at Hand. Again, the Poetry Fest wraps up Saturday downtown. Get out and enjoy it. Ladies, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks for listening this morning. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And 1A is up next. Meanwhile, on tomorrow's show, don't miss our Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Have a great Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.